right? And I think one of the main problems, one of the questions that I'm asked on a regular basis is, when is the oil field coming back? So since we're an oil field community, that's an important question. So maybe you can address that a little.
Well, yes, I have every answer to exactly when the oil and gas business is going to recover, the exact date and time that prices will rebound. I will give you inside information on when to buy, when to sell, where to lease, how to get a job doing business with the oil and gas business. Thank you. No, I'm sitting there and I was like, well, I have to follow Ronnie and then I have to follow Linda there, and now I get to drone on about oil and gas, and it makes you feel how insignificant we all are sometimes when we think we have problems and everything. And so I'm going to try to push forward and try to give you some good information, but God bless those folks and the work they're doing. I'm also proud and passionate about the oil and gas industry. We are a proud industry. We do a lot for the economy of Texas and, frankly, the world. There's a lot of people out there that like to demonize the oil and gas business. Believe me, there are parts of Texas that do not like the oil and gas business. She was saying something about the rural people in cities that don't know where their food comes from, and they don't know where their gasoline comes from either. Look at Hurricane Harvey. Look at the cities. Look what happened in San Antonio, Fort Worth, Dallas, Austin. Everybody was running to the gas pumps because they read on Facebook that we were going to run out of gas. They read on Facebook. We were going to run out of gas. We had more gas in the pipeline than ever because we were prepared. But because people panicked, you couldn't get gasoline in some of the major cities. I don't know how it was here. Probably all right. Maybe it was a little off for a little bit. Depends. But you know, you read on Facebook, right? You went down, you had 3/4 of a tank, you better top off. But, you know, it is. It shows you how important it is. And we face this at the legislature time and time again. The oil and gas industry contributes a significant amount to our Texas economy. Just last year, our industry put $13.5 billion into the state's coffers. That might not sound like a lot of money, but that's about 1/5 of our Texas budget. That goes to fund our public schools, our roads, transportation, and I'll leave it to the legislators to figure out how to spend that money. But we want that number as high as possible. In years from past, when that number was somewhere in the neighborhood of $17, $18 billion, when oil prices and gas prices were higher. That shows you what a healthy industry does, not only here locally in this part of the state, but all over. So again, you always come back to the question of when I say gas prices, I'm talking about natural gas, not so much at the pump, and also with the crude. And what specifically do you guys, I mean, have you seen, can you just give me a quick what you've seen over the last 3-4 years in this area while I pull this up?
As far as
just drilling activity and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's been kind of slim. I mean, people are struggling right now.
Yeah.
So I kind of think that's kind of where we would like to see if you have any answers on, you know, is there something coming up in the future, whether it be new, some kind of new process or if anything's going to be in the area anytime soon.
Sure. It's not a simple yes or no answer. Like anything that's challenging. But there are some items to consider and to think about and that I like to tell people about. It kind of gives you a little pause and think about how the industry sort of works. And I learn something new about it every day. I'm not an engineer. I'm not a scientist. I'm a liberal arts University of Texas grad that gets paid to talk about public policy. So it shows you how proud my parents are of me. But I have learned and sat in with enough people to learn how the business works. And the fact is, if you look back, I was looking back at some history. In 2008, natural gas was $12 to $14 an MCF. Oil was $140 a barrel. Fast forward to today, well, then go to 2014, oil prices were below $30. Gas prices were below $2. Today, we're hovering around $50 for a barrel of crude. And then we're flirting with about $3 on the natural gas front. Okay? I remember getting a phone call from a financial institution a couple years ago around Thanksgiving, and they were absolutely floored that the price of gas had bottomed out, the price of oil had bottomed out at $70 a barrel. And what was the oil and gas industry going to do? If I got that call today, I'd be like, hallelujah, $70. But if you look at the trends of it, we actually went down below 30, 20 in just in the recent couple of years. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, OPEC. OPEC ramped up production overseas to flood the United States market to combat the shale revolution. Plain and simple. American producers are unique rather than the entire rest of the world. Everywhere else in the world, for the most part, are state-owned government oil-producing companies. Saudi Aramco, you have Gazprom in Russia, Caracas, Venezuela, Sitka, all these things are owned by one entity. Guess what? In the United States, we have over 500 major producers that are out competing against each other, trying to do the job faster, safer, more efficiently to adapt to a changing price in markets. Today, even at $40 and $50 a barrel of oil, oil companies can still go in, invest capital, and come out and make a return. And I always like to say this with a little caveat, and yes, make a profit, because that's what we're all in the business of doing. It's not an evil word to say profit. Oil and gas, generally, if you're lucky, you get 10% return on profit. We don't bat an eye when Google, Facebook, Twitter, or whatever these things are make 100,000 times profit, but we're providing a service and a valuable commodity. So that takes you back. Okay, so how does a company adapt to that? Just like you all do as small business owners. Efficiencies, streamlining processes, changing the way you do business. Today's technology is evolving. Technology is the key to all this. What we thought we would never be able to get out of the ground 10 years ago is absolutely astounding. You remember the people that said peak oil? Remember people said we were going to run out of oil by 2015? Or they probably moved it to 2020. Now you don't hear from those people anymore. I don't know where they're working these days. Think about it. We have more resources with today's technologies than we can absolutely even comprehend. And that's with today's technology. 10 years ago, we were not drilling how we're drilling today. Today, we're drilling 8,000-10,000 feet in some shale formations and going out horizontally 2 miles and coming back and bending pipe back at the wellhead. It's absolutely astounding. I always like to give this, it's not applicable to this area, but just in terms of concept of how things change so fast, two things. When gas in 2008, when gas was $10, $12, $14 an MCF along the Texas Gulf Coast, and in your future statement, we were going to build import facilities to bring in natural gas from other parts of the world. Today, we are exporting liquefied natural gas to the entire world, and we've just got started. We just got started. Cheniere Energy, Corpus Christi, I think they're over their 500th shipment now. They're taking trillions of MCF liquefied natural gas that shrinks down in size, puts it on these mega tankers, and takes them to Asia, takes them to Europe. We've got another facility in Lake Charles, Louisiana, another one at Sabine Pass on the Texas-Louisiana border, and at the Rio Grande Valley, we've got three more potentially coming online. They all need natural gas. They all need natural gas. This area is very heavy in natural gas. I'm not saying that tomorrow you're going to start seeing increased activity. You're not going to see it a month or 4 months from now. But the trend is moving that more natural gas is going to be used for a couple of reasons. Obviously, the export facilities, huge potential. The rest of the world is paying those $10, $12, $15 MCF prices right now. Asia, they've shut down their nuke power. They're looking for alternative sources. There's going to be a worldwide continuing demand for natural gas. India, Pakistan, China, all of them are needing more and more energy as they move out of a largely agrarian type set of societies. There's over 1 billion people in India. Half of them don't even have power today. Same goes with Pakistan. They need that cheap gas. They can't harness it themselves. They can't bring it out of the ground safely and efficiently. It takes millions and millions of hours of engineering experience to do this. But we have it right along the Gulf Coast. And the pipelines that run through this area from West Texas to North Texas to South and East are all pointing towards the Gulf Coast. almost every day we see a new pipeline project coming online to take condensate, oil, liquids, natural gas from West Texas, North Texas, East, and West that are all pushing towards the Gulf Coast. The other factor that's going to drive natural gas use is the return of manufacturing that's already started in the United States, specifically in Texas, almost exclusively in Texas. Bravo, right? ExxonMobil in Portland, Texas. Talk about a rural community. I'm not saying very rural. It's just across the bay from Corpus Christi. Exxon is investing $10 billion to build the world's largest ethylene cracker plant. What that is they build the building blocks of plastics. The future is plastics. If anybody gets that movie reference, if you're over 40 in here. Nobody's laughing. This is a massive facility. It's on a 13-acre property right on the deep water port of Corpus Christi. They're going to use a tremendous amount of natural gas. They are building it as engineering as big as they possibly can with today's technology. It is going to create probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 10,000 construction jobs over a 5-year period. When that plant is up and running, it is going to use a tremendous amount of natural gas to spur this manufacturing process. Now, Exxon is a pretty formidable company. I don't think they would be spending $10 billion in Portland, Texas, if they didn't think the future was pretty bright with natural gas use and that access to it. And there's a reason why they did it right in Portland. It's because they can get natural gas from all points in Texas right into the pipeline. So again, I would love to give you the definitive answer of exactly when things will start creeping up, but what you will see is when prices start to rise in places in the Eagle Ford Shale, in the Barnett Shale, where the Barnett Shale 2 years ago had no active drilling rigs, but we're starting to see a couple come back in Johnson County, sort of the south area, Wise, Parker, that area, if you're familiar with that area. 2 years ago, nobody was drilling. Some of the smaller companies are starting to come in because they know that they can do it efficiently at $3, $4 if it goes up a little bit more. And I think you'll see a trickle-down effect from that. I think you'll start seeing some increased production in this area. You still have plenty of production in this area, just not as much as you used to. Again, we have the private property rights to be able to do that. Again, when I talk about other countries, we're unique, especially in Texas. We own 99% of our land is owned private property. Other states, Utah, New Mexico, they own half the land out there. And there's a whole other issue of trying to drill on federal property. But in Texas, if companies are going to come in, they're going to come into Texas. They've already started moving in from North Dakota and other places because this is the most profitable place to do it. So the trend is there. It's not going to happen overnight. Again, I've said that enough. But if you look at some of the data just from the Railroad Commission today, limestone, I pulled Limestone County, Leon County, and Freestone. Still in Limestone County right today, you still have total number of wells, over 1,100 gas wells still producing. Leon County is 572. Freestone has 2,600. Now, are they all top producing? No, but they are available. And the question of jobs, too. This is another factor to keep in mind. A lot of these things have already been drilled. They've already been cased. They've already been bored. They've already been linked up to facilities. The pipelines are put in place. So when things even do come back a little bit more, you're not going to see that massive rush that you saw before. You're going to see some workover work. You're going to see maintenance. You're going to see additional, ongoing type work. But once that infrastructure is in place, you're not going to have a lot of that initial rush. That's good and it's bad, but, it's less traffic. It's less trucks on the road. There's less things. There's the good and the bad with everything, but you'll see when the prices do sort of kind of come back up, I think some of these wells will start getting some increased activity, which helps the tax base, which helps your sales tax, which helps everything in the economic activity that it brings with it. I heard, I think it was Sid Manager said, down 300,000 in sales tax? Boy, you bring in some crews that start spending $150 a night at the Holiday Inn and buying steaks and beer and all those other things, and all of a sudden you start seeing those sales taxes go up and up and up. That's what we want to see in the industry. The other thing I want to talk about is the future demand of oil exports. Would you believe that in December 2015, the United States could not sell unrefined crude to the rest of the world? Anybody know that? In the early 70s, we put in a self-imposed ban to say that the United States could no longer sell unrefined crude to the world. Because that was in response to the gas shortages and things that OPEC kind of had us over the barrel, if you will, in the early 70s. Well, Congress, and I won't get into Congress, that's a whole other subject, but they put a provision in to say that the United States could now export oil, unrefined oil, to the world market in a must-pass bill that passed over Christmas in December 15. So now the United States is becoming an exporter. We're doing somewhere in the neighborhood of 800 to 1 million barrels of oil per day. And now I know what you're thinking. You're going, why are we still importing oil if we're doing that? It's a worldwide traded commodity. The refineries that we have built in this country have been geared for overseas oil. They simply have been. We are importing less and less, and that's a good thing. And I'll kind of circle this all back together. But the fact is, we still have to buy oil from Mexico, from Canada, from South America, from the Middle East. But we can also sell ours to those nations, those developing nations. And it's a globally traded commodity. So it'd be very short-sighted for us to say, we're only going to use American domestic Eagle Ford, Barnett Shale, whatever oil. If your refinery has been invested in over the last 50 years billions and billions of dollars to refine these products, it doesn't make much business sense to say we're going to completely retool a refinery, spend billions of dollars just so we can say we only refine domestic crude. We're going to continue to operate in that market. But the important part of that is OPEC no longer controls the market. If OPEC says they want to close the Strait of Hormuz, go for it. We got it. We'll just use ours up. And we'll tweak our refineries. There may be a lull, whatever. But we're not sensitive to that anymore. It's energy security. We are no longer held over, held with a gun to our head. I'm trying to be polite. My wife says, watch your words. We are no longer held hostage by countries that can control our energy destiny any longer because of what we've done here in this country. And so that's the ebb and flow of the market. We'll see more and more exports and changing in the oil market, which bodes well because there's going to be increased demand for that worldwide and in the United States. And if our economy really picks up on a national scale, we'll see those prices rise a little bit higher. So I want to pause there and see if we have any questions or anything. No, but I see one back there.
I'll venture the question.
Sure.
Now, I understand what you asked. Problems there. Just out of curiosity, do you have a sense of what the Russian coal industry has done?
What the question is? What role does coal play?
What direction does it go?
Well, my personal opinion and what I've seen, I think some of it is slowing down. Look at Monticello, the news that was in the Dallas Morning News this week. Monticello is a coal-based power plant in Mount Pleasant, I believe, Titus County. They're shutting down the coal production of that and moving towards natural gas and other renewables and other things. We still have a tremendous amount of coal, and we should use everything we have in our portfolio, if you will. There are some that say they want to prop up other ones, some like with renewables and et cetera. Some have said, it's a complicated thing. You know, we just want to participate in the market as an oil and gas producers. That is what we want to see. We want to see coal succeed. We want to see renewables succeed. You know, Texas became the number one producer of wind power because they competed in the market. Now, you can have arguments about subsidies and tax credits and whatnot. The fact is, we're the number one wind producer. We're the number one oil and gas producer. We also have a tremendous amount of coal. That gives us the flexibility to work in the marketplace. Yes, sir.
Should I ask you your FLK? Yeah.
the question was how much. We have a tremendous amount of natural gas reserves. How much are we exporting right now? Probably less than 1%. Natural gas is often flared still in West Texas because there's not enough market to transport it 600 miles to the coast. So it's flared for a variety of reasons, safety, pressure, and frankly, there's not a market for it. So with today's technology, we've barely scratched the surface. One other thing I'd like to add, because I know there's a lot of small business people in here, and I used to do this when I was in the governor's small business forum a couple years ago, is I always got this question about, how do I do business with the oil and gas business? And the answer is, it's not very easy. You have to, and I always have somebody come up to me and say, well, just give me that number to Halliburton so I can sell them something. I don't have that. But what I can tell you is, if you want to do business with any operating company, whether large or small, and I think who's it from TxDOT said, don't limit yourself. If there's a product out there, they buy it. Same with the oil and gas industry. I've seen people take bottled water business in the oil field in South Texas and increase their business tenfold because they delivered on site. Pest control, paper products, office supplies, entertainment, barbecue, catering, you name it. But you know what? They went through the process. That's the key word you have to do in the oil and gas business, is you have to get on their vendor list. You have to go through their approval process. You're not going to be able to show up at a drilling site and say, I have something to sell. You have to have a work order. You have to have gone through to make sure you have your insurance, your requirements, all these things. And each company is a little bit different. So if you go through and get on their portals, get on their approved vendor list, you may not get all their business because they like to spread it out a little bit. But that's the biggest thing I can advise anybody that's wanting to do business with the oil and gas business, is go out and get on the vendor list. Get to know if there's a local person. Don't call the corporate number. You'll never get anywhere. Try to find a local person, but the first thing they're going to ask you, do you have your paperwork in order? Are you on the vendor list? So I always like to impart that when I talk to small business folks. Yes, sir.
Just a question on construction. What is going on with the pipelines? Are they doing any kind of, the pipelines have been in the ground for a long, long time. And I know it's time to start renewing some of that. Are the companies starting to look at doing that, or is that an ongoing process?
Sure. Pipeline maintenance is an ongoing, everyday. In Texas, we have 425,000 miles of pipeline. 397,000 of that is intrastate, meaning it does not even leave the state of Texas. We have the largest infrastructure pipeline of anywhere in the world. And so, ongoing maintenance is a major factor. A lot of new technology is out there. We're using drones now to monitor for pressure and leaks and such. But you still got to have somebody go out there and operate machinery to dig it out of the ground and fix it. That's always going to be a part of the process. Well, with that, anything else?
Thank you, Luke. I'd like to thank everybody for being here today. You have some papers in front of you. Be sure and you take all those with you when you go, because I don't want to have to pick all of them up. And so I'd like to thank our partners today, too, the City of Fairfield, Nevada SPDC, everyone that came to sit on a panel. The Texas workforce, the governor's office. I'd like to thank all of you and let everybody know that there's some giveaway stuff back in the back. The people that are still here, you might want to ask some questions. Luke will be here for a minute, and anybody that might have questions for these folks, please stay. I'd like to introduce our chamber.